Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. The WhatsApp 087 032 32 32. Now, it is set in Mayo during the county championships, and in this new novel, Fun and Games, we find out the full lynx-scented cruelty of 17-year-old lads waiting for their leaving cert results, slagging each other over their mothers, the girlfriends, the progress of their sex lives, the whole lot. There's a family wedding thrown in and reminders that the CAO college ambitions are utterly loaded with social class snobbery in Ireland, and the jokes land like jets at Heathrow. We'll come to that in a moment. John Patrick McHugh, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Oliver. It's lovely to be here.
And congratulations. This is a big moment, isn't it, in a young writer's life?
It's amazing. Yeah, my debut novel, it feels really special. My collection of stories came out during COVID, so it's very nice to be actually able to go to things and celebrate it properly. So yeah, it feels very special.
That was pure gold.
That was pure gold. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of excitement. Going for it. You were from? Are you from Galway?
I was born in Galway. Moved around Cork as a child, and I moved back to Galway when I was 12. But my mother is from Achill Island, so all throughout my childhood, teenagehood, that's where we went back to, Achill Island. Her family are all from there, so I kind of feel like that was kind of stable home as I moved around, but I am probably a Galway boy, true and true.
You identify Galway, and you've followed Galway in the championship last year, I think, religiously.
Yeah, maybe body of a Galway person, heart of a Mayo person, but yeah, I went to, it was a beautiful summer following Galway along, and yeah, it was so special.
If you were living in Cork as a child, once it had to be some force to pull that identity, it's Mayo.
It's Mayo. The earliest memories of watching football are my mother screaming at the TV as Mayo missed points or stuff like that. So yeah, yeah, it's been a constant in my life.
Constant heartache. Yeah, says you. Yeah. Come here. Did you go to college in Dublin for a time?
I went to college in Galway. I went to University of Galway, as it's called now. So I did my BA there, and then I went over to Norwich and I did a master's in creative writing there.
Ah, yeah. Because you've been all around the place.
I know. Globe setter.
But Galway's home now.
Galway's home now. We moved back in January of this year, so very lovely to be back in the town.
And did you move back from England?
Moved back from Dublin.
Oh, so you were in Dublin?
I was in Dublin for about 8 years. Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Yeah.
You'd have to read a novel to find out where you've been. This book is set in 2009. Why did you choose that year?
2009? Yeah, I picked it because, well, one, I didn't want any kind of international soccer tournaments to distract my boys. Yeah. I wanted to be very kind of intense and isolated. But also, like, 2009 was such a great year, and just in terms of phones were kind of there, but they weren't all consuming. As you touched on earlier, the music was amazing. And I didn't know
until this morning, to be honest.
But yeah,
are you a Leaving Cert in 2009?
That is probably also the reason why it's 2009. I did do my Leaving Cert that year. So I can confirm that we went in and I got our paper results off.
You did? Okay. Yeah. I feel sorry for the kids who don't get that ritual.
Yeah, the scariness of being handed the brown envelope and then peeling it back. And yeah, my mother trying not to look at me as I read the results.
That's where that whole scene comes from. That is a real dramatic moment.
Yeah, yeah.
You better tell us about Fun and Games then, because John is the lead character in this. Tell us about John Masterson.
John Masterson, who is not me, he's not related to me. So John Masterson is a 17-year-old boy, and he's beginning that kind of last summer before he leaves for college, after the Leaving Cert. He's not really a boy, he's not really a man, and him and his friends are kind of dealing with the future and what it means to be a future. He's also dealing with a lot of family drama. His mom and dad are kind of slowly slitting apart. A private message from his mother has been leaked across the island, so that's causing him a lot of trouble. Yeah. And he works in a hotel and he's trying to get on the senior football team. And most importantly, he meets a young woman called Amber Gould, and he begins this kind of romantic relationship or situationship throughout that summer. Yeah.
It is that complicated.
It is that complicated. Yeah, yeah.
And we're with John the whole way through. So
we're in his head, and that was kind of really important for me. I really wanted to kind of get at his kind of syntax, his language, and to kind of see from his point of view, which, as you said, can be fun, but it can also be quite painful and quite raw. But that, I think that's important. I think that's what fiction can do. It can get at the truth in a way that maybe nonfiction sometimes can't.
I read it in the Mayo accent, actually. Do people do that when they're reading? I think they do, don't they?
Yeah. Well, it has the Mayo flair, a bit of Galway slang. It's all kind of mixed in there, yeah.
The dialogue is just brilliant because it's really believable. We do feel like we're in the gang of kids. And it's quite po-faced to say it's about masculinity and class. It is like an adventure yarn as well through a summer.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's obviously serious stuff I want to tackle in there, but I also want to entertain people. That's what books are for.
Yeah.
I love the dialogue. I love the boys. I still laugh at my jokes. Even if no one will, I will laugh at those jokes. But yeah, it was important to get the dialogue right. A lot of reading it aloud, a lot of editing and stuff like that. But yeah, it was important to maybe tackle tough issues, but also have a story where people care. I want people to care for John Masterson. I want them to care for these boys, even if they might offend now and again.
Yeah, and a little mild warning that, you know, there's adult content in the novel, and we want to talk about that because it's about the casual cruelty, isn't it? It's slagging. It's a bit of fun when you're reading it and you go, oh, it goes to dark places as well. Brenda Courtney was talking about nicknames in his show yesterday, filling in for Ray. And nicknames are important, and John is hurt early on, isn't he? Because
So nicknames were a thing I've always kind of been fascinated by because they can be so cruel, and yet, particularly for boys, they can be so cruel at the beginning, and yet by the end they're almost lovable. You know, they almost come this like endearment, you know, that you're looking for the guy who maybe pooed his pants in first class and he's still called Poo Pants, you know, and you're like, it's this like lovable term. So John has a nickname.
His mother's
private message was leaked, so he's been called Tits throughout that summer by his friends. And it comes to a point where you almost forget the cruelty of it. You start laughing.
I was literally about to say that by the time you're halfway through, you're going, oh, well, that's his name is Tits, and it loses that kind of meaning.
Yeah,
and the savagery or something.
And it only Amber is the one who actually kind of reckons with it, asks him, does that not hurt your feelings? And I think that maybe that's the weirdness of being a boy. Sometimes you can just accept that cruelty and then make it a joke, and then it becomes you. You don't really deal with it. You just kind of accept it. You put it on your back. So again, it was just, I wanted to kind of tackle that and get at that while entertaining, while being funny. And it is a funny nickname, you know, but the boys are also, they're not really helping John deal with this moment.
No.
They're laughing with him, not at him, but they're with him, but they're not really dealing with the emotional kind of problem. And I think maybe that's a general issue with a lot of young boys.
He's carrying it around, but his mum is a very strong character, and she's kind of moved on with her life, obviously unaware of
that. Yeah, well, I've been raised by very strong Mayo women, my mother, my aunt, and my grandmother, Annie Catherine. So yeah, I was just fascinated. Could I show a character who... Well, two characters. I didn't want either parent to be the bad guys. I'm not interested in that. I wanted a bit of grey. But Yvonne, the mother character, is a strong woman. She's probably someone who put her life on hold for her kids. And now as they're kind of leaving the nest, she's reckoning with, what am I doing with my life? What do I want to do? And they're very complicated questions. And because we see it from John's point of view, I think a lot of the book is John coming of age is the whole tag. But it's also coming to realise that your parents are adults, which is a very strange thing. I think it does happen around 17, 18. You realise they're getting older, a bit frailer, that they have flaws as well.
And they're starting to make plans for their own lives.
Yes.
As she is in this, because the parents are separated at very early stage of separation.
Yeah.
And the dad is a kind of a lonely character.
Yeah, Peter is the father. And I love Peter. But Peter is probably, he's a good-natured guy. He's someone who... he means well. He loves a lame joke. But he's a decent guy. He's a decent man. And again, that's what I'm interested in, is exploring these decent characters, maybe in unfortunate circumstances, trying circumstances, but showing a bit of humanity despite maybe his flaws, despite maybe his mistakes. He's still a nice guy. And their relationship is kind of, by the end of the novel, it almost like controls the whole narrative, which again, I was interested in, to almost see if I can get into GA, get in the situationship, and also have the family in the background.
The father-son relationship is quite loving, actually, isn't it? That's kind of surprised me, I have to say.
And I didn't want to do the classic trope of the silent father, the father who is abusive to the son. This is a guy who loves the son, and by the, you know, he cares for the son and goes to all the matches, cheers him on. And yet, you know, he has his flaws. There's still friction there. Maybe John Masterson doesn't appreciate this as much, but this is... That's growing up. You never appreciate kindness, do you, when you're growing up, especially from authority figures?
Take it for granted.
Yeah, completely.
Amber is the girl at the centre of the situationship. She's a little bit older than John, so she's considered ancient, obviously, straight away. But she's at the core of his attitudes towards women that were obviously inside his head. And that's kind of, that might frighten some people if they don't understand the heads of teenagers.
Yeah, you know, it was important that Amber was a couple of years older. She's 19, so John's 17, she's 19. It's only 2 years, but she's outside his social sphere. She's almost past the hierarchy of secondary school. And it's important for John to have someone with that perspective that he could kind of almost see himself from afar through her. And I love Amber. Amber is, yeah, she's a tough life. And John is definitely not a fun partner. And there is cruelty in how he thinks of women. There is cruelty in how he deals with Amber. But I also thought that was important to be honest about that.
Yeah.
Because cruelty is often how men treat women. Is often how young boys treat young girls.
It's a reality, isn't it?
It's a reality. And if we don't actually try to engage with it, then what's the point, you know? Obviously, it's a lot in the news these days about adolescence and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And John isn't a psychopath, but
there's no murder of social
media. No murder, no. And he is.
But it does show that kind of that dark side, that dark
completely
edge.
Completely. The ingrained misogyny, the ingrained sexism. And again, I thought it was important to get at that and that kind of, I suppose, locker room talk that would have gone on at that age and probably still goes on today.
And it's totally acceptable in that sphere, isn't it? In that group. Now, Kira King, our colleague, we're chatting about your book this morning. She was going by and she was telling us that she wished she read this. She's read it too. She wished she read something like this as a girl when she was a teenager, because she would have understood the stupid teenage head of a boy.
Yeah. And again, it's not just me reporting this stuff for laughs or banter or to get, you know, to shock. I never wanted to shock my readers. It may be shocking, but I feel like it comes from an honest place, a place where I have thought about it and considered it. And I do think that relationship of boys and how they view women is one of fear, a lot of it. You know, John really fears what the boys think about what he thinks.
Yes.
Yeah. So if they don't rate Amber as a beautiful young woman, then John will not rate her as a beautiful young woman. I think that fragile nature of power and social pressure was really, really important for me to kind of explore.
One thing that's really done well is that we get the sensitivity of the teenagers as individuals, which is completely at odds with the collective mob, isn't it? That's has a swagger and a confidence and a belief that everything is true and right.
Yeah, and I've definitely, you know, I've seen it with my own friends, myself. You know, in a group mob, you can be so abusive and loud and boisterous. And then one-on-one, you can be so sensitive and looking for a little hug. I do find boys' friendship endlessly fascinating because you can have the biggest blowouts. I'm never going to talk to him again. Then, you know, 2 weeks later, you're like hugging and you're best friends. You know, everything's over the top. But there is like a kind of a tenderness to it. And I feel like that tenderness is there between those boys and their friendship. And their friendship is so interesting to me because they are kind of on that cusp of leaving. And what does it mean for friendship once you leave a secondary school where you're contained within those walls?
The lads are kind of shocked when the John character says, am I a bit fat?
Yeah,
like the body shaming image. It's all part of it as well.
It is all part. And maybe it's something that I definitely suffered as a teenage boy, my own self-conscious nature when it comes to my body and my weight. And I remember having a similar conversation with a friend when I was putting on a t-shirt, and he was shocked and he was so tender and kind. I think boys have that kindness in them and that generosity, and they will support you. But yeah, it was something that I'm always interested in picking, because maybe it's not as reported as other body issues, but male body issues can be a real big issue and a big problem for kids. It can really drag them down. And John is, despite training twice a week throughout this novel, he's still worried about his weight.
Yeah, he still thinks he thinks he's lumpy and he hates his body.
Yeah, there's a real self-loathing in John, despite being a popular boy, despite having friends, despite being loved. And despite also kind of, he does like himself, and yet he also doubts himself throughout. And again, I think that's the contradiction of teenagehood and young manhood that is so kind of fascinating and sad, I think.
Do you sense the same thing happening? Do you know the teenagers now? Is it harder than it was when you were a teenager of the late noughties?
I can only imagine it is. I couldn't imagine living now with phones and the pressure of that. I thought adolescence was very good on just phones, how where they are, they're everywhere, you know? I think it's way harder now. We have a lot of fake idols. You go on Instagram and it's not real, you know, what people are seeing, what they're projecting. So I think it's obviously way tougher for all young people now. I think there's a greater acceptance about being gay, about any queerness and stuff like that, and that's all fantastic. But I do think maybe the standards of beauty, the standards of body image is a lot harder now. And yeah, I feel for kids these days with the phones. Like, Jesus.
They're very young in gyms as well, aren't they? It's younger and younger.
Yeah, and again, I feel like that kind of feeds into it. Yeah. There's boys, I go to the gym now and I see lads 15, 16 doing weights. And it's like, you don't need to do that, you know.
Bodies aren't developed.
Yeah, you're not. You're still kids and you're running around playing GA. That's all you need to
they're
do.
They're on nutritional programs and like sapping the joy.
Yeah, yeah. It should be fun. It should be fun.
They're having fun in this novel. That word hasn't quite exploded yet, has it, in this one? The other thing is that it's a great GAA novel. And are there other great GAA novels? It's kind of, certainly not for this era anyway.
Yeah, there's great non-fiction books on GAA. In recent years, we had Emma Ryan's The Grass Ceiling, which is fantastic, about women's sports. And Kieran Murphy's This is the Life is a brilliant book about it. But yeah, I couldn't think of too many fiction books. And it kind of came very natural to me, the structure. Because I remember playing GAA as a teenager, and it was my week. You know, Tuesday was training, Thursday was training. That was kind of the week. And I thought that'd be a great way to structure a novel while still having the family, while still having all the relationships.
An amount of training that's going on. That's where all the tension is relieved.
Grueling.
And also it heightens up quite a lot as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I wanted to challenge myself. Could I give readers a sense of what it's like to be on a team, to be training, to kick a football. That was a big thing. I remember my first reader doesn't play football at all, and she read it, and I remember she loving the fact that you could feel like you're kicking a GAA ball. And that was a challenge I wanted to see if I could see that, which is kind of giving a sense to a reader what it's like to be on a GAA team.
To get fouled as well.
To get fouled. Or to foul someone.
Yeah. We're getting clotheslined over the sideline. Yeah. It seems to be a recurring theme. Yeah. But again, it's men getting things out of their system.
It's men. And again, we're very lucky in Ireland for Irish writers, because we have a word like leaving, which is the leaving cert. So that's a great word to have in a novel.
That's true, yeah.
And also you have seniors. And I always love this idea of a 17-year-old suddenly on the senior football team.
Yeah.
And the idea of, I remember going into a dressing room as a 17-year-old boy with lads in their 30s, and I had no connection. But then the amazing thing about sport and team sport is suddenly you're on a pitch with them and they're your equals. You know, the camaraderie, the celebration if you get a victory. And yeah, I found the kind of dressing room space kind of really fascinating. And again, I suppose the GAA all ties into John's concern, because every training session is a judgment. Every training session, there's someone who's the best or the worst. And it all kind of ties into John's idea of like society's gaze on him at all times.
Studsy is an important character, and this particularly around that whole social class, where we like to think in Ireland, no, we've no class system here at all. That's only for the Brits. But it's very evident, isn't it?
I think, I think it's there. I think it's maybe the hidden secret. And maybe it's come more obvious in places like Dublin, but I think around the country, I think it's there. So Studsy would be from maybe a lower economic bracket than John. Has hardship when it comes to paying for college, the idea of getting accommodation, books even. These are concerns John Maston doesn't have. And he's not even aware of it. And I think that maybe that's kind of the problem, I think, that we don't even acknowledge this, how tough it is for someone like Studsy, who likes art, who is a nice lad, kind of, who wants to think of the future, and yet this is kind of taken out of his hands, whereas John doesn't even have to think that it might go. He's just going to go to college. That's what's going to happen to me.
And he's got low self-esteem in this regard, doesn't he?
This Enda
character.
Enda,
I love when you learn his real name every now and again. I go, oh, his name is Enda. Obviously, that's why he's gone to Studsy.
I know. I thought, well, like, you know, there's people I know only by their surname. You know, their nickname. And then when you finally get their first name, you're like, what? No, that's not their name. I remember, because I'm called John Patrick when I write books. And my uncle went to an event and he was there for 20 minutes. And then afterwards, he was like, talk to me. He's like, oh, no, you're brilliant. I didn't have a clue who this JP fellow was, though, for ages. So nicknames are always a bit of a funny one, yeah.
I heard of a fella in a team once who bought four pairs of jeans in the one day, and they called him Spider forever.
That's a good one.
So they're the series themes. Going to college, even though they're going from Mayo to Galway, and it's written as though Galway is this metropolis where all the desires and everything will finally be opened up. That is kind of a rite of passage you got to go through as well.
Yeah. So I suppose I was living in Galway, so I never got that maybe transfer to like a college life. But yeah, that kind of change over from secondary school to college life, being freedom and being able to go out and be kind of an adult was amazing. Yeah, and I love the idea of Galway being like this monstrous city, you know, this big city of crack and kiol and all this. So yeah, it was important to have that kind of on the horizon for them to almost eye up and be kind of fascinated by.
What's also great about it is the fact that it's a GAA novel, coming of age, and the Brits are loving it.
Yeah, I know.
The Telegraph. You must read this novel about the messiness of young men. The Guardian. It captures the tenderness and menace of young men. That must be a nice...
It's lovely. No, it's been really kind. The reviews have been so lovely. I probably do have to thank Paul Mescal and his lovely little gas shorts for getting that popularity up. But yeah, no, it's fantastic. And I had no worries about it having GAA in it, because I think GAA is a wonderful sport. It's our national sport. Why shouldn't we write about it? I think it's integral to our culture. We've read enough books about baseball and cricket and stuff like that. That's so right. Why not GAA?
They don't explain it to us.
They don't.
They can look it up on their own time. John Patrick McHugh, thanks so many for coming in to us. Fun and Games is the name of the novel. You're launching it tonight in Hodges Figgis in Dublin, the big shop. That's the kind of the moment you've been waiting for, I'm sure, for many times. Is there any other place you want to very, very quickly mention?
I'm doing a festival, the International Literature Festival of Dublin, in the middle of May, which would be great. And then I'm doing an event in Books Upstairs on the 8th of May as well.
Enjoy every minute of it.
Thank you so much, Oliver.
And we'll see you for the next one, I'm sure. I hope it's underway. Fun and Games, John Patrick McHugh. Good luck.
Email oliver@rte.ie.